The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello and welcome. Today we're looking at a different industry and we're going to be discussing farming and agriculture. And my guest is Richard Kendrick, who was once a student of the college, has now been a tutor for some years, and spent 7.5 years working in the agricultural industry. Richard, welcome. For those of us whose idea of agriculture is somewhere between The Archer's long-running UK soap and Jeremy Clarkson's The Farm, can you sort of give me an idea of the sort of overall landscape?
Hiya, Kieran. I would say Jeremy Clarkson is closer to reality than The Archer's is. The Archer's, I mean, it's a soap, so it tends to focus on the human side of it. But Clarkson, despite being very Clarkson-esque in the way that he kind of bums around the farm and deliberately causes trouble, the points he's raising around what it's like to be a farmer are actually pretty much on the nose. And I know that within the agricultural community, he's been sort of lauded for raising a lot of attention to certain areas that are real difficulties. For instance, as a farmer, you not only have to be an agronomist, you have to be a sort of basic level vet. You have to have an idea if you've got any livestock, you've got to work out what's wrong with them. If you're arable, then you've got to work out what your soil pH is, what your soil quantity is like, whether or not it's compacted. You've got to know about things like pans, which isn't like frying pans. It's like very compacted ground that you need to shatter the pan. You have to talk about stale seed beds. And all of that is down to, you know, how acidic or how alkaline the soil is, how well things are going to grow. Is that enough rain? Is it not enough rain? There's an enormous amount of information you have to take on as a farmer. And there's no one who sits down and trains you up. Agricultural colleges have a good go at it, but a lot of people just learn by doing it or by being part of the family firm. So it's an incredibly complex job. And on top of that, you've got to be an engineer as well, because if your tractor breaks down, most of the time, you've got to be able to fix it yourself before you can get someone else out, because you've got such a short turnaround, particularly on crops, to get everything in before the weather changes or the humidity changes, that you have to know how to repair these things. Some of my farmer friends, you know, they're amazing at what they know, and yet often the outside opinion is, "Ooh, our farmer, get off my land," and that's about it. So in terms of marketing to them, in terms of being a farmer and knowing how they tick, it's a very, very complex, very difficult job. And it's something that actually is a lot of fun to learn about.
So what sort of size farms are we talking about in the UK?
There are the actual land mass in the UK. So there's 72% of the land is given to agriculture in the UK. So when we're talking about things like, we go, "Oh, we're very urban," or "Look at the amount of houses we're building," there's still 72% of the land that's actually partitioned off as being agricultural land. There are a wealth of different types of land. So you've got, you know, the mountains in Scotland and the mountains in Wales, the mountains in the Lake District and anywhere really with mountains that is pretty much only good for sheep or livestock of some sort. And then you've got areas like Cambridge. I think 80% of the country's grain for bread is grown within a 10-mile radius of Cambridge. So you're looking at a really, really diverse mix of farm sizes. If you are a large arable farm these days, you're going to be farming anywhere between 2,500 and 10,000 acres. A lot of the farms in the Cambridgeshire area are owned by a few large farming corporations that farm thousands upon thousands of acres. So I currently live on the Lord de Ramsay estate. And just in our area, I think there's about 10,000 acres that they look after, all arable. So it can go from that to my family farm, or my wife's family farm rather, which was 72 acres and was mostly sheep. So it's really broad. In terms of dairy, cattle, sort of 80 to 100 cows is a relatively reasonable farm these days. You've got some super dairies based in Montgomery in Wales, and they can be anything up to 1,000 head. So we've got a real diverse mix.
So I think, again, from an outsider point of view, you think of farms very much as you said, the family farm, being on the land for generations, or you hear the stories of the big sort of super giants. not really concerned about the local area, just interested in their super dairies or their super arable. Is that actually fair? Is there much within the middle?
Yeah, I think most of the, it's like any other industry, most of the farms you would equate to being like an SME in business. So you got that sort of middle, the majority of the farms are that kind of middle of the road, reasonable size. They can make a living off it just about, as long as they've got the farm subsidy. The main split in farming is around how farmers approach technology. So for instance, in dairy is a very traditional route of farming, a very, very traditional way of doing things. It hasn't changed a lot over the years, except for when robotic dairies started coming in. And robotic dairy farming has completely revolutionised dairy farming, as long as you've got enough cattle to make it worth your while. Cows are actually, they love a routine. They want to be milked at the same time. They want to walk in at the same time. So a robotic dairy farm is really good because the cows can decide when they want to be milked, and they'll come in at their convenience and go up to the robotic milker and get hooked up. And so actually you need very little input from farm hands or anything like that, so that reduces your labour costs. But it only works if you've got a certain sized head of cattle.
Hang on. We are talking about literally a dairy that is there all the time with the robots, and the cows just come in and slot themselves in?
Yep, pretty much. Yeah, so they've got a feeder at the front. The cow walks in, starts eating from the feeder. The milking machine hooks up automatically. It is, as I said, a robotic milker. It will, and the cows decide when they want to come in and when they want to go out. And that's actually been around for, I was in farming up until, I've worked for a company called Cramp, who were in agriculture. I was in farming up until about 2018, and we'd already had robotic milkers for 3 or 4 years by that point. And that's the big thing that people don't realise about farming is how quickly they'll adopt technology. Drone contractors were around within about 18 months of drones becoming affordable, and they'll use drones to map the land. And now we've got 10-year charts, which will show exactly where the best and most fertile parts of the land are compared to areas that are really weak or quite waterlogged. And there's no point in planting any seed there, because seed and fertilizer are the biggest inputs to a farm cost. So drone contractors took off really quickly. You can go out and rent a drone and have someone come and map it out and do all that for you on a contracting basis. Self-drive tractors. I was marketing for a Massey Ferguson dealership back in 2009, and we had self-drive tractors then. Now they've got to the point where they're accurate down to 5 centimetres. It's all satellite controlled, so you have a radio mast on top, or a little aerial on top of the tractor, which will connect up to the satellite, and then it will just drive itself down the route that you've set, get to the end, turn itself around, and come back down exactly at the width you need it to be able to lay the seed and the fertilizer. And the same with combines. Most combines are now self-driven. So that's why you see so many farmers taking Instagram photos during harvest, is because they're not actually driving the combine. They're just sitting there taking photos and reading the paper and making sure that nothing weird goes into the header. You know, like... You get all sorts of things like stones, metal. That's why you see so many metal detectorists out there, just picking up metal before the combines go out. Technology is something that is really, really quickly adopted, because if you can increase yield through technology in a short amount of time, whether that's milk, meat or grain, then you're going to see a massive amount of gain from exactly the same amount of land or exactly the same amount of number of animals. And that's a farmer's trick, is they've got a certain amount of land they own. If they increase that, they're going to have to spend a lot on land, and it's expensive, so they have to get more from what they've already got, and they will adopt technology as quickly as they can to make that happen.
Okay, I have to say, I'm very ignorant about farming. I wasn't expecting technology. You did actually use another phrase there. You said data. So is that something else farmers are exploiting?
Yeah, big data is a really big thing in farming, because you can pretty much measure everything that's going on. So most dairy farmers now, obviously, they one thing you have to get across about farming is that farmers absolutely love their animals. They're not pets in the traditional sense, but they get very attached to the cows they've got in the herd, particularly in dairy, where you have the same cows year on year because you're getting milk rather than meat. So they get very, very attached to them. But they all have ear tags, and those ear tags are quite often RFID. So when they go into the milking, they can tag in to say that that cow's gone in. They can measure the amount of milk they're getting out of that cow day in, day out. They can compare that to the amount of feed that's going into that cow and then balance the two out to make sure that the right amount of feed's going in to give the right amount of milk coming out. And it's the same with arable. All tractors are fitted with a telemetric system nowadays, so they can work out exactly down to, the partial acre, down to the centimetre, how much fertiliser they need to put on each plant. They've now started developing infrared sensors that will, the beam will hit the leaf, and from the amount of green in the leaf, it will come bounce back and say whether or not that needs more fertiliser or less fertiliser or more water or less water. And then they can see from that data exactly how well that crop's performing. And on the flip side of that, of course, the data is one of those things that the government loves measuring things. So DEFRA, I can't remember the name of the what DEFRA has become now, but they measure everything. So they measure the number of cattle there are in the country, the number of chickens, the number of horses, all that, the number of land that's given over to arable, how many hectares were produced of grain, wheat or barley.
Okay, so DEFRA was the Department of Environmental, Food and Rural Affairs. So Richard, that was really clear about the sort of overall side of the agriculture industry within the UK. Can we talk now a little bit more about the sort of products that you might be selling in? So you've already mentioned that drone companies got very excited. I can understand you've got fertiliser companies. What other things might farmers be buying? What other parts of the marketplace are there?
So on the farming side, you've got what they call the inputs. Your outputs are always your grain or your animal or your milk or whatever. On the input side, you would have seed, feed and fertiliser. And interestingly, there are only five companies in the world that produce farming fertiliser now. So there's a bit of a control on pricing, a monopoly on that side of things. So it's very difficult for farmers to get a good price on fertiliser. It's incredibly environmentally damaging to produce as well. So trying to find the right fertiliser to put in is quite hard. So there are a number of companies that will create technologies around reducing the amount of fertiliser you need to put on a farm.
Okay, hang on one second. So fertiliser, five companies in the world control the fertiliser market. Surely fertiliser comes out of the rear end of cows, or am I just being very naive?
Sort of. No, there's fertiliser and then there's fertiliser. So you've got the manure, the slurry, that farmers will keep and then sell on as to be spread on the land. But there's only so much that will give in terms of nutrients. If you are trying to really keep the ground working well, you have to put additional fertiliser on top, which is usually spread out of a fertiliser spreader, which is one of the machines you would buy as part of your farming kit. But the thing about that is it will replace things like the nitrates within the soil. And that's one of the key areas that you need to keep sort of high. And each soil type needs a different type of fertiliser, and each crop type needs a different type of fertiliser to work well together. And the more you grow crops within a single piece of land, so in the old days you used to have the three field rotation. So you would have one field fallow replenishing its fertiliser or replenishing the nutrients within the soil over a year. But we've gone away from that as we've mechanised and we've gone into big farming, which means that you now need to pump that nutrient back into the ground before you grow the next crop, because that previous crop has taken it out. And you know, manure isn't as efficient as it needs to be to completely do that. So again, with kind of going back to what you need to sell a farmer, seed, feed, fertilizer, and then machinery and buildings, rat bait, toys, wellies, clothing. When I worked at Cramp, we did 500,000 different product SKUs online to sell into a farm. So there are so many different things a farmer needs to buy.
Wow. So I'm just intrigued by how many product lines you can have.
Basically anything that like I say, it comes back to that farmer needing to be a scientist, an agronomist and an engineer and a businessman or business person rather, all rolled into one. And well, I will say actually that's one thing that I'm really pleased about now is the more I follow farming on Instagram, and I still do, it's the more that we're starting to see that it's more diverse and that farming's become quite a sort of accepting place to go and work now, whereas it wasn't when I first went into farming. It was very son would inherit from father. Actually now it's very, very diverse and we're seeing lots of different people going into it, so it's great.
It was quite a movement post the pandemic, wasn't there, of people deciding that their life's ambition was to go and run a small holding.
Yes, but there's a very different way of small holdings versus farms are very different. Small holding, you can get away with a couple of pigs and sort of get by, and you've probably got a job on the side. Your farm is a full on vocation. It's not just a job, because it never ever ends. You're going to, during harvest, you're going to be out nearly 24 hours a day trying to make sure you're on the field harvesting away. And you know, that's the other thing you need is you need lights that are as good as daylight so you can keep going. Modern technology has just made it so that a farm can keep going all night pretty much. And it means that they can get the crops in as quickly as possible. We have 150 acres around us, and it takes, they come out with three big John Deere combines every year, one of my favourite times of year, because we all go stand out and watch it. And we'll see, they'll probably finish it within a day and a half. And in the when we first moved in just 7 years ago, it used to take them a week to get through that field. So the speed at which they're moving. There's a technological revolution going on in farming that people just aren't aware of. And it's quick, and it's moving quicker, certainly than construction. It's moving quicker than some manufacturing elements. I've been incredibly impressed by how quickly they adopt it compared to other industries I've now worked in.
So one last thing I wanted to come back to was you've talked about it being a vocation, and you've talked about farmers being emotionally attached towards their animals. How does that play into the marketing side? Because presumably if you're a farmer, you don't want to be seen as particularly emotional.
No, that's true. A farm is a business. So when you're looking at it from a typical marketing, or we need to put something in a box point of view, then it is B2B marketing that you're going to be doing. However, the majority of farms are that middle sort of size where there's only a couple of people looking after the farm or making the decisions, and they act in a very emotional way because it's not just their business. They don't go home at the end of the night and put their feet up and think, oh, that was a good day's work. They own that business. They live in that business. It's their home as well as their business. And because of that, it is an emotional, it's an emotional decision making. The decision making unit for a farming business is usually very small. There'll be the person that owns the farm and probably maybe one, two, three people who use the equipment or make influence the decisions. But the way that they make those decisions is very much in the same way that a consumer would make those decisions. So it's based on purchasing risk. So they'll feel what's the risk of me purchasing this equipment right now. That's a very big thing that they'll fear. There'll be a big fear around what purchasing they're going to do compared to, say, a business-to-business typical decision-making unit where it'd be done by committee, or there'd be lots of, maybe there's a three-pitch process to get onto a preferred supplier list. None of that really in the majority of farms. The very big farming groups, yes, that might be the case, but the majority of them, you're talking to one or two people who are going to make that decision, and they'll do it based on whether they like you, whether they trust you, whether they think they're getting a good deal, whether they think they're getting good value, which are sometimes two different things, and also whether or not you've been able to show very clearly that this is going to improve their farm or make their life easier. And I think that's the biggest thing is, as a marketeer, if you're going to market farming, how are you going to make that farmer's life easier? Because they've got an incredibly tough job. And if you're the one that stands out as being better than the rest at making their life more convenient so they can move on to the next task, or they can make more from their farm with less input, then you're definitely going to win with your marketing.
One last question. Is this an area you find that most marketers have already got an agricultural background? You mentioned your wife's family farm. Or is it something that people who are sort of town born and bred but just fascinated could still get into?
Anybody could go into it. As long as they spent time learning, right, it's like any marketing. As long as you spend time learning about what the customer needs and you become part of, you know, you don't have to have that life, you don't have to have that lifestyle or that lifetime investment. I came into farming in 2009. And although my wife had a farm, it's only a small holding, and I wasn't really involved in it before I got into it. I talked my way into a job of being a marketing coordinator for a Massey Ferguson dealership, and then worked like billy-o to make sure I learnt about how farming works. So go out and meet farmers, go and spend time on farm, go and listen to them when they're having a good day or a bad day, have a cup of tea and a biscuit and ask them about what they need and what they like, and the first thing, I think the first time in my first week, I just walked into the yard and pointed at a tractor and asked someone to teach me to drive it so that I could get an idea of being hands-on. And then I spent the next 10, 12 years working in farming, still with no real farming background. I mean, my dad was an engineer and I was brought up in Wolverhampton. I've got absolutely nothing to do with farming other than I happened to marry a woman who had a farm. You don't really need to have been a farmer to be a farming marketeer. There are pluses and minuses. It's a really fun industry to work in, and it changes all the time because farming is so technologically quick and revolving, and because there is, it's so dynamic that actually it's more fun than you think it's going to be. Unfortunately, as a top career level, if you want to move into a senior marketing position, they're like hen's teeth and they don't pay as well as other industries. So that's why I moved from farming into construction, was because the overall opportunities were much, much better. And there were a lot more opportunities to go for at a senior marketing position rather than in agriculture. And I think that's because there are so few businesses. Agriculture is still seen as a bit niche, so there are less businesses there focusing on that particular market, despite the fact that I think in England and in the UK, so I'm not entirely sure if it's Scotland as well, but there was farming contributed around £8 billion to the economy, and does that annually, which is quite a large amount considering that there are only about 460,000 farmers in the UK. So that's a large amount of money across a small amount of businesses.
Richard Kendrick, thank you very much indeed. I think we've all agreed that now that farming is most definitely not a niche industry. That was incredibly helpful for somebody, particularly like me, who is very town born and bred. I've learned a huge amount about farming, agriculture and marketing. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Okay, thank you.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.